David Fathead Newman and James Clay, both on tenor sax, with Some Kind Mean. That was recorded in New York City in 1960, and it's from the breakthrough album produced by Cannonball Adderley, The Sound of Wide Open Spaces. The whole idea was to put the instruments in a natural environment without much tinkering with the sound. Also appearing, Wynton Kelly on piano, Sam Jones on bass, and Art Taylor on drums. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and we're talking about chaos and crisis, American democracy in the age of Donald Trump. No question, things have changed and are changing dramatically in the age of Trump, and the changes are all-encompassing, from the very definition of democracy and national identity to a recalibration of where and how America interacts with the world. Approaching the end of the second quarter of his brand new administration, it is fair to say that President Trump is proceeding with his plan to substantially, if not totally, change the existing social, political, and economic order. But it has already taken a toll. His impetuous, not well-thought-out actions and policies creating havoc and anxiety for Americans and unnecessary rifts with the world community of nations, even with his allies. So against the backdrop of the most recent crisis the nation is dealing with, the White House caused political upheaval in Washington, we are going to discuss today Trump's role in, quote, making America great again, unquote, with his different approaches, his very different approaches to governing. And this is a constant theme that the president and those who appear to be advising him have created a whole new path in so many ways that it also seems to be ill-advised, but it has created the resurgence of an America that so many millions of people thought they had put behind them, a mean America, a racist America. An America that is constantly looking to start a war because it is a great thing for the economy. America, the America of the haves and have-nots. People who have power and people who shouldn't have power. An America where money talks and everything else walks. That's the America they have reached back into and are, or have already begun to revive, that America. And persuading us that this is progress, this is how you change America to go forward, as they say, in the world. It may be a hard pill for some to swallow, but we have to grow up. This is their thinking. We have to grow up and face the reality that we have wasted so many opportunities to get to this point sooner. We should have been at this point 20, 30, 40 years ago. But it has taken this long because of these lily-livered liberals who can't decide, who can't come to terms with the fact that in order for us to progress, to get to the point where we should be getting to. Hard decisions should be made. And part of growing up is to accept that there will be some losses. There will be some attrition. It never falls to the people who really deserve attrition. But this is part of growing up. It's a new day. They've made all kinds of reasons and come up with all kinds of explanations as to why pain and havoc and crisis and chaos are natural parts, natural byproducts of the process. If we object to it, if we don't like it, it is because we don't get it. We have not matured. We have not come to terms with the fact that America has lost so much of its base, both domestically and internationally, because leadership has been unwilling to take on the hard choices. Well, that's the explanation. So in other words, if you differ, it must be because you don't have the guts to admit and to see the logic of the way Donald Trump sees the world and people of his ilk see the world. They can preach the doctrine of sacrifice and the doctrine of hard choices and attrition and making America great again because it's great for them. It's great for them. When you look at the government and the quality of leadership that we have, you see how correct you would be in coming to the conclusion that we are laden with all kinds of burdens, largely because the leadership is so incompetent, or it is so one-dimensional. It looks after the interests of the people who are powerful and people who have money. That's pretty much their purpose. So they do not have to bother themselves with all the ancillary issues, like how many people are homeless, like how are the elderly going to balance the tough choice of either paying their rent or eating food every day. They can't even comprehend that world because they've never really been in it. They have no understanding of the other side of this coin. Their view of the world is one-dimensional. It's about money and power and how to get more money and more power. And in service of that purpose, that goal, everything is subject to be thrown out the window in service of that, accomplishing that single goal. So we're going to talk today in an analytical way about how you assess the American body politic as it exists right now. I'm saying this because it's quite possible that I'm way off the mark. I'm really wrong. I'm accepting that. That's a possibility. But we are involved today in a discussion, an analytical discussion. How has Trump changed things? What exactly do you see has changed and how it has changed? And as we proceed, hopefully not too much longer with this wrestling with this question, how do we get to a point of understanding that it is not only just the apparatus of government that we need to take a look at? We always have to remember that we ourselves have to look to our interests. So how is the government's newly defined purpose and its policies and so forth, how is that squaring against what we see as being the task for us if we are to achieve our goals and objectives and our interests? There's no right or wrong today. Another day, we'd take it from a right or wrong perspective. I want us to always remember that when we discuss things like this, we're looking at systemic things. We look at, or more correctly, we're looking at things systemically. How is this new system squaring with our understanding, our ideological orientation, our point of view as to what matters in the business of governance, in the business of being citizen co-governors? Technically, that's what we're supposed to be, so that when we apply the brake, it's supposed to stop. Things are supposed to stop. We see that it isn't following that objective. When we rev up the engine, it's supposed to move. It's not doing that either. But we are clear that what is happening now makes us all irrelevant to the process. It makes us all incidental citizens, if at all. And we have no choice. There is no accommodation for us in the old-fashioned term. And we could argue, and I would admit it would be a very good question to raise as to whether people ever, in the history of the United States, whether the people had ever been co-equal in this process of government. But absolutely now, we can see how relevant the question is. We are supposed to be the throttle and brake. We are supposed to matter in the course of governance. Governance is not one person or one party dictating what is going to happen. It is supposed to involve our input. We can see right now our input is neither required nor will it be tolerated. We just have to go ahead with whatever the plan is and whoever is executing the plan, which, of course, will have nothing to do with our benefit and welfare. So I put the question out to you today. In the current climate that we have been in since the election, how do you regard this system? How do you regard our reaction to it? Is it over for us? Even if we fight against it, even if we register our displeasure and discontent, have they in fact won? Have we lost totally? And should our concern be at this point accepting the reality of our situation? We are not scoring points. We are not getting things to go our way. We are not having much impact on the process of governance. If we concede to the fact that to a large extent this is true, then what is our new mandate? Given what we have already seen, what we continue to see, and what we correctly can project as to where things more than likely will be going. The question comes back to, where are we going? If you think we're going anywhere. So I'll take a little break, and when we come back, we'll entertain your highly analytical skills in answering or addressing this question right after this. And the number to call is 888-874-4888 when we get back from the short break. Listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm Eutrice Lead, and we're getting very analytical today. We're looking at a pretty tough question to answer, but we have to answer it. We have to take a look at the question, and we have to invest some kind of energy in coming up with something of an answer. How are we to deal with the conditions that exist and that are likely to exist in the Trump, in the age of Donald Trump? Where are we going? We know where he's going, and we know where some of the political parties are going. Where are we going? That's the question. And I hope you have an answer. I hope we can encourage ourselves to contemplate the issue. David from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Thank you.
Hello, how are you?
Oh, I called into the, I was trying to reach you. I couldn't get you on my internet service.
Oh, okay.
But it's a pleasure and an honor to speak to you.
Thank you. Same here. So what are you inclined to contribute today in terms of how you see the picture and the challenges that we face as a collective?
Wow, this is so great. What about the hearings that are going on now where you have Donald Trump that's being exposed as a liar?
But we knew that even before the election, didn't we?
Yes, but now we have a star witness.
Who would that be?
Well, the former director of the FBI?
James Comey?
Yes.
And you think Trump is a liar?
Well, it's a confirmation better than his, you know, some confirmation hearings.
The thing is, we cannot put any trust in any of them. They have not earned our confidence or our trust based on what we have witnessed. So using that as part of your barometer of how you measure where we are, dismiss them for the moment and concentrate on what they have done to indicate that the system is going, no matter who, quote, wins this argument that they're having, the system will remain exactly the same. Donald Trump has been lying for years. James Comey has been lying for years. So we go with that as the accepted fact. And now we try to look from the outside. What does this mean, this period that we're in where they are pretending that they're trying to ascertain the truth of things and who is to be impeached and who's telling the truth? Our position should automatically be they're all not to be believed.
You know, that's a thought that had crossed my mind because, generally when you troubleshoot something, you start at the lower end and then you see where the central problem is. And it seems to me that all of the key players are in the top positions. So, they say something rolls downhill, but nevertheless, all of your top officials are corrupted. You know, they seem to be implemented in this, grand scheme.
Yes, because, you only need to ask James Comey one question to have that whole thing unravel. Mm-hmm. And that is, it concerns Hillary Clinton. All of the years that she's been government and all of the years he has been in government, his primary purpose was to protect her. Politically, that was his job.
Mm-hmm.
He should have been the one to put Hillary Clinton under a jail. And he just apparently didn't feel that he could do that. So our position should take into consideration certain facts that we should accept as being more than likely true. And the fact that we should accept as being more than likely true is that this system and everybody deeply enmeshed in it, in one way or the other, is lying and cannot be depended on to give us a truth of any situation. Mm-hmm. They're all, in one way or the other, compromised for the most part. So that's where we start.
Yes.
Now, how do you function? What is your strategy for basically not being driven crazy by the system? What is your system? What's your counter plan?
Well, that's a good one because to be honest, I don't have one.
I think you do. You have one, but perhaps you haven't thought about it in a conscious way.
What I was thinking about doing was, like they say, getting involved on the local level of some type of organization that's, that's going to be able to. But something, the Green Party really seemed to have let me down this time, and I don't know what else is out there.
Well, there's you. You have a system. You have a system, or you can create a system that would help you to survive the madness and the chaos, which are directly aimed at you and people like you and me. We're the ones absorbing the heavy shock of this thing. So we can't afford to say we don't have a system. We got to make one. Because the number one imperative at times like this is what? Survival.
Mm-hmm.
These people are out to kill us. And I'm not meaning to sound extreme, but you look at it. They're denying children meals in schools. They're shutting down the schools. The unemployment rate among our community is just staggering. The elderly are, at the end, wit's end, trying to figure out how they're going to cope with what's coming. So we have to have a system. So I think, David, you do have a system. You haven't thought about it. And you haven't considered it to be a system. You assign your political responsibility to other people. You mentioned the Green Party and so forth, and that's good that that it exists. But ultimately, your system of survival is what comes first. What does it look like?
Mm-hmm.
And how will you make it work so that you achieve the number one imperative, which is survival?
Mm-hmm.
These folks in power, they have infinite resources to stomp on you and me. They have the power of their system available to them. We don't have any of that. So we have to think seriously about putting together our system, which is aimed at the exact same outcome that they are working on, which is their survival. Mm-hmm. The problem here is that their survival involves our suffering, our death, our lack of opportunity. They thrive if they're able to succeed at doing these things to us. We can't just say, well, we look for the Green Party to help us through. They're also near dead. We're all suffering. And we have no formulated plan. We are all reacting. We don't have an articulated plan or a series of suggestions as to what individually, how do we harness our individual and by extension our collective power so that the first law of nature is achieved, survival.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks, David, for your call. I really enjoyed it, and thank you so much for getting our brains in gear for this discussion today. Well, let's move to David, the other David from Brooklyn. You're on the air.
Good afternoon, Utrice.
Hello.
As we go on with this discussion, we have to get some things clear to everyone. First of all, when you're talking about high government officials and politicians, a good synonym for those people, I think, would be crooks. That's what it is. They are crooks.
You know what's funny?
As far
that
as
was the word that came to my mind. I was cracking up about
they
that.
They don't represent the interests of the mass of people. So, and doing our system analysis, we have to get that through our head. They do not work for us. Now, when you think about the oligarchs and the people at the top of the pyramid, the corporations and whatnot, they control the whole game since the beginning. The Constitution was not made to do what they tried to fool you to think, liberty and justice for all. It was never that way. And what has happened is over the years, this century and the preceding one and the 1800s and so forth, as it goes on, the goal of the oligarchs and those people at the top of the food chain is to enrich themselves more and more in terms of wealth and let other people create that wealth for them by work and working on land and using the resources and they collecting the wealth and as it goes along, giving the people less and less. The system, if you do the system analysis, you'll find out that their goal is to get as much as possible out of the people and the resources or the natural resources, as we call them sometimes, and spend as little as possible on the masses of people. And there's a variety of ways they have done it. Now, as part of analysis, we have to look at the foundation stone, the idea of this white supremacy. And those listeners who have not read Fair Allen's book need to read it, The Invention of the White Race. They have to understand that the number one strategy is still in effect here, divide and conquer. That's the only way one person control, let's say, 1,000. You have those 1,000 people fighting against each other. Why? By racism and all the ways that they have of doing it. Now, as we fast forward up to the Great Depression, they saw the pressures from communists and socialists and unions and whatnot. So the ruling class, the oligarchs, those at the top, had to give up something. So they had Franklin Delano Roosevelt doing what was necessary to blunt what was going on and give up some social benefits. But we're dealing with capitalism, imperialism, colonialism, and whatnot, and that is not to make it good for the people. We got to get that through our head. When things are bad, those people at the commanding heights give some liberal benefit to blunt the rebellion of the people. And that is what has happened during the Depression, the Depression in the 30s, and up to the Second World War. And after the war, they started doing things to kind of take things back. And as that went along through the 70s, they were taking more and more things back. And most people don't understand that the people of this country at war with the ruling class. So you have the people who are ruling and the masses of people thinking they're your friend, and actually, you know, corralling people, like, let's say, they corral animals. Well, people are corralled into this corral called the Republican Democrat Corral. And in that corral are all the masses of people, and the ruling class is controlling the gates of that corral, and they have this way of making people feel that we're all in there together, you know, freedom, liberty, and justice for all of that rhetorical nonsense. And as it goes along, as today, let's go fast forward to today. The ruling class has controlled the people so well that it's able to enrich itself more and more and more at the expense of the people, having them going after each other, diverting their attention from the real issues to so-called immigrants and Muslims and black folks and whatnot, rather than the fact that this is a system that is designed to do one thing and has not changed one bit. And that thing that it's designed to do is enrich those at the top. And they would be very happy for the people here to be impoverished like they are in Bangladesh and some of those countries that are sweatshops and they use for nearly slave labor. So that is what's going on today. Now, here's the point. Occasionally, they'll come up with some liberal thing, like, you know, Obama's health care law was really a Republican thing, that he benefits the drug companies and the insurance companies rather than, let's say, a single player. They'll give you a liberal thing to kind of blunt stuff. But the real thing is, you can't be a liberal. This system has to be changed. We have to get away with this liberal stuff, with this so-called Democratic Party and, you know, liberal bills and whatnot that give this and that and the other, like food stamps and things that will benefit a few people to sort of blunt the suffering of the poverty that they're visiting upon the people. The system has to be changed, and it's not going to be changed to swear your allegiance to the Democrat Party like they've gotten some of the black folks to do, or the little poor white folks all around joining with billionaire Trump. You know, things are not going to change. People have to come up with something different, and it won't be in the Republican or Democrat Party.
All right. We will continue this discussion. You've laid out several good points that need to be pursued. We just can't pursue them today just as a result of time constraints, but we should absolutely take the points that you have laid out and pursue them in greater detail. Thank you so much for calling in today and contributing always so meaningfully. Thank you. Let's talk to Jose from Rosedale. You're on the air.
So how are you?
Fine, thank you. How are you doing?
Well, I'm here listening to the wiser heads than myself. You know, I don't consider myself one of your A-plus student, but I attend class all the time.
Pre-A.
I'm listening
student.
And I'm learning.
Me too.
And I want to believe that all of your students are really not here starting from Consciousness 101. And so I have a problem with how many of our people are really deciding to drop the plumb line at the ascension to power of one Donald Trump. When that plumb line should have been dropped a long, 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 long time ago. We're not catching hell now because Donald Trump is in power. We've been catching hell for centuries. And we keep trying from time to time to reinvent the wheel. We don't figure in the system here in this country. We were never really a part of the plan of development and citizenship in this country. That's not what the system was designed about. And sometimes our people seem to think that we really figure in this thing. And the how should I put it? The analytical aspect of what is taking place in this country. Sometimes we actually think that we are part of this thing. Well, we are not. The only role we play in the system is to be exploited.
Well, you know, David just finished making those very points.
Yes,
so
right.
Can I ask you to move to the next level of the same points that you're making?
Which is what I was about to do.
Okay, great. Go ahead.
That's what I was about to do, because I keep saying that we are keep going over this same journey over and over again. That's why I said your students should not be at Consciousness 101. And I've been hearing this part of it time and time again. So for me, as an old timer, as an individual, I have chosen to be a part of organizations I believe are progressive. And I consider myself not a leader, but a progressive and conscious follower. I'm a member, one of the organizations that I'm a member of is the UNIA. It has a new president general by the name of Michael Duncan. And a plan of action.
Could I interrupt you for 1 second just to explain what the UNIA is?
It's the Universal Negro Improvement Association, an organization that the Honorable Marcus Josiah Garvey created for the resurrection and the advancement and development of African people, no matter where we are.
Okay,
so,
good.
Yes, my professor, as you said.
No, I said that was a very good definition. I just, you know, when we use acronyms and so forth, it's always a good thing to tell people what it means.
Yes, that's why.
So you're a member of the UNIA, and just continue from there.
Yes. So there was a plan that was put together some months ago, that's over a year ago, where we, the conscious, would come together and pool our resources, financial resources and other resources, to put a business together, put a business plan together. We have come to the realization that there are thousands of Caribbean restaurants and other African restaurants in the city here. And they all purchase their goods for their business from companies, from people that just don't look like us. They don't represent our hopes and aspirations. They don't live in our community. At the end of the day, when they take that money, when we hand that money over to them, they take it out of the community and go into theirs and build and develop their communities. And we find that there's something wrong with that. It is crazy. We've been doing this thing for decades or centuries, and we're not gaining from it. So we have created this restaurant association, supply association, and it has moved from the planning stage to now it is a real entity. Right? And we are working on the minds of our people, trying to get them involved instead of giving the money to the folks who don't represent our hopes and aspirations, we spend it among ourselves. You can invest. We ask people to invest in it, and some of us have done so. And the business is going. We are supplying to some restaurants, but we don't have everybody on board, or we probably will never get everybody on board, because some of our people, they are hell-bent on doing things that goes against their interest. So the business is gone. We have been bringing in food from the Caribbean. We intend to bring up food from down south and other places, because there are others in our community that call themselves West Indians business and Caribbean business, whatever, when they're not from the West Indies. I prefer the Caribbean, but some folks, old habits die hard. They are not from the Caribbean, but they are selling, they're bringing up products from the Caribbean and selling it back to our people, making a whooping profit and developing their communities. So we are working on our people's minds, trying to get them to understand that it is in their interest to buy from themselves, apply, spend their money among themselves. And when this business grows, it can be a catalyst to move into other aspects of business in our community, where we can enrich ourselves, empower ourselves. We can create jobs for the young people. You have the youngsters out there can't find any work to do. We want to be able to create jobs for them. We want to be able to influence these politicians in our community. We want to be able to feel conscious leaders in our community to get them in politics. We understand that politics is all about money. You have to have money to influence. The brother mentioned a moment ago, and I said it on this program a long time ago, politics is about money. Money that will yield power. These politicians, every single one of them, as the brother have said, and I've said it many times, they are crooked to the core. And we may go out there. I've been voting in this country from ever since I had the right to vote. I've been voting for even dog catcher. I've voted for everybody. And I've come to the realization that that is not what's going to yield us power. We have to be able to control those folks in our community that we put in office. And if you don't have the funds, and you don't have the spine and the backbone to stand up against us, so when you put your money up with them and you feel the kind of candidates that have your interest, our interests at heart, that is how we are going to start to move and advance as a people. So again, I am with this organization. I support it wholeheartedly, and I don't want nobody to go around saying that black folks don't this and black folks that. We have blacks among us that still believe and trust in each other.
No question about it. I want to thank you for bringing these points to light today. We have a long queue ahead of us, people wanting to get on the air. But thank you very much, Jose, for calling in and sharing your thoughts with us today. Thank you so much. We'll talk next with Clay from Elizabeth.
Hello, you three.
Hello. What are your thoughts about the question at hand, which is how in this period of time, this period of history, how do we address the question of our individual and collective advancement politically and our survival?
Well, I would tell you that, speaking for myself, I try to fly under the radar. I realized some time ago that this is a fascist, racist society. Look at the courts always clearing these cops to go free, okay? Look at this quarterback for the San Francisco 49ers, Colin Kaepernick, starting quality quarterback, can't find a job because he stood up. Now, you support your brother. So as far as Mr. Colin Kaepernick, I went and bought his shirt that I will wear proudly during football season, okay?
But let's get to the issue. The big issue we're supposed to be on target with today is that in this age, and we're witnessing how fast things are changing and for whom things are changing for the better, what is supposed to be our reaction? You just talked about flying under the radar as a mechanism for survival, I guess. And there is great merit to that argument. But take us through it and tell us how it delivers or will deliver for you a workable solution.
Well, flying under the radar means not supporting their institutions. I tell young people, especially young people of color, take as much as you can out of this country. Scorched earth, but eventually you got to roll out of here because this is not where you will make a living or make a life. These people will eventually destroy themselves. They just haven't found the right entity to give them a kick in their rear end, because if you look at the history of this country, the white boy in this country has never gotten his ass kicked, really, okay? They've never been bombed, but now you have people that have bombs that can come here, okay? Eventually, they're going to pick on the wrong one, and the bombs will be flying here. So the point is this. Do you want to, if you know there's going to be a drive-by, are you going to wait on that corner? I don't think so. The drive-by will come, and my choice is not to be on that corner when it happens. Okay? Flying under the radar is, you know, support your brother, support your sister, okay? Try to stay away from the enemy. Try not to support them, even though that's difficult to do in this economy. Okay? Educate yourself. Reinforce your health. You know, look at ways of reinforcing one's health, because everything that they sell you is a prescription for death. You know? But eventually, once I retire, once I'm able to retire, I'm already looking at other places where I'm going to end, where I will do my retirement. But again, I tell my kids, take what you can, but eventually you're going to have to roll out of here, because the end here will not be pretty. And ultimately, they're forecasting it themselves. Americans, for the most part, will be cold and hungry in the future. Okay? That's what's coming.
Wow. Well, thank you. It's a bleak prospect, but it is real to you, and we need to listen and pay attention. Thank you so much. Thanks for your call today. Jay from New York, you're on the air.
Yes, good afternoon, Chris. How are you?
I'm hanging in, but we're getting an echo from you on your end.
Is it better now?
Yes.
It seems to me like the country is going to hell in a handbasket with no direction whatsoever on way we should govern ourselves, how we should move forward. None of the necessary things to give the American people a quality of life that they're looking for over the next, let's say, 50 to 60 years. I think the administration that Trump has in place has absolutely taken that away and is taking it away from the American people. And I honestly don't know if we as Americans have the necessary fight back to do anything to change it.
So you think that there is such a thing as the American people?
It's supposed to be. be the American people.
I got you to consider that it could be different from the American people. It could be a whole different setup. But for purposes of your discussion, we'll go with the phrase the American people.
Yeah. I mean, you have to... In a country, you have to have a direction and a vision to move forward to have its growth as a nation. And in all honesty, I don't think we have that for in this country. Sadly to say, the reason
did you think that you had it? Let's say with Obama.
No, I don't think we had it with Obama. Honestly. But what we did have with Obama was a form of civility and intelligence.
Guess who agrees with you? John McCain.
He said today that
leadership under Obama was much better than leadership under Trump. So it's an interesting thing how ironies, you know, pop out of the woodwork. When we are in a situation like this. But the mere fact that he articulated that meant that even as a, quote, arch conservative, unquote, he recognizes that there's something dramatically and fundamentally wrong with where we are today because of the approach of that the leadership is taking. All right, so we are fast coming to the end, but you can give us a sense of where you're going as quickly as you can.
Well, I think where I'm going is I'm just going to continue to try and help young people maneuver and make their lives better, to help them progress into the necessity of success they should have in this country. That's all. Other than that, you know, you just continue to live and try to do the best that you can. But it's an uphill battle. Like, to be honest with you, I never thought I would have to face at this time in my life, nor my family's future would be in such perils because of someone like Donald Trump and the Republican Party, because in all honesty, they are sending us to a place that one would not imagine or one, I hope, would not agree with if they had any sense of responsibility to the planet. Have a good day, sis.
Well, thank you so much for your call today, Jay. But that brings us to the end of our program. And the reason we're having these kinds of discussions, which will also be joined with discussions on how we situate ourselves for survival. By the way, in the last, I hope you've been taking note of where the economy is going. The reports have not been very good. Lots of stores are closing. Lots of tech firms even are going out of business. And more and more people who are held out to be, significant people in the financial industry are saying now, actually articulating now, concerns about the state of the economy. So we were ahead of that discussion. Well, we'll get closer and more finite about things you can do to kind of get yourself braced a little bit better situated to cope. So thank you so much, all of you who called in today and shared your thoughts. very, very profound observations, that, and we need to hear each other say things truly from the heart. It is not important whether you agree or disagree. It is important, though, that you make your best effort to listen. Coming up next, Meditations and Molotovs with Vincent Emanuele. You can reach me at Lead Stories, L-E-I-D, stories@gmail.com. As always, a pleasure and a great privilege. I mean that, to be in your esteemed company. See you tomorrow. Bye-bye.